I am crazy, like you. I am crazy.
Welcome to Beautiful Minds Radio at CFRO 100.5 FM, Destigmatizing Mental Illness. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. Tonight on the show, Dr. Chris Gorman and his actor better half, Brendan Beiser, will discuss stress. We will be joined by Nicole Emily Marcia, the founder and director of Fine Balance Yoga. And for our personal story, we welcome Candace Kendrick, who will speak to us about reviewing mental health during a career change. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Now, Dr. Chris Gorman and Brendan Beiser talk about the mental health condition of the week, stress.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's interesting. We always start out with the mental health condition of the week, but it's actually just the mental health condition of the day. Brendan, tell me what your thoughts are about stress.
I'm anxious.
You feel anxious?
I'm anxious.
Tell me more.
Well, I noticed that in all the shows that Richard quoted as highlighted, as what about this show where this happened or this show where that happened, we weren't referenced once. So I'm guessing that either we're really sucking, which has me be super stressed out, or we might get fired. You get that? So I'm just getting more and more anxious as I talk about it, actually.
I think we're doing better than the other parts of the show, and they don't like to highlight us because we make everybody else look bad. That's
now
what I think is going on.
Out.
Anyways, I want to talk about the concept of stress and how painful it can be for people. The original research into this came from a guy named Hans Selye in the 1920s, and he was describing these effects on biological or psychological entities where homeostasis was being affected. And homeostasis is when your system is in really good balance. And that happens usually when you're about 8 months old. If you're in a secure, safe environment, your heartbeat, your temperature, everything is just right. And then, and tragically, it's a bit downhill after that. And so stressors play a big role in terms of altering whatever your equilibrium might be.
Homeostasis, isn't that what plants do when they process things?
That could very well be. I don't know much about crop dusting. I think you would know. Do you want to share that with the audience? Your awareness of crop dusting?
No, I have to say I once knew an 8-month-old plant, and it seemed quite content.
Oh, okay. Well, I think plants are very contented, and that's because they don't have a sympathetic nervous system, which is where most of us are wired on a regular basis. If we could get people to spend some time with their parasympathetic, their sort of lie down on the couch and don't care about anything, there'd be a lot less business for psychiatrists and other mental health workers.
Well, then you'd be unemployed, and that's no good for anyone, quite frankly.
And that would be very stressful, considering my expenses. You know, one other thing that's interesting is that stress is lessened by exercise. And I think that's kind of interesting because they're both, I guess the activity helps calm the rest of the system or maybe puts your system into a better place.
Well, and I was interested that Joel mentioned that on the news, in fact, that there's research now shows that it, in fact, does make a difference. I know that when I exercise regularly, I am far more at ease than if I don't. In fact, I did it today. And I had a cup of coffee. And so the results have just been, you can ask Christina herself. I've not been a pleasant person to be around.
Even through the airwaves, I'm finding it difficult, Brendan. I sense your pain.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? They talked about some of the top causes of stress on the planet. And one of them is meteor overload, and they cited radio as an example. So we may be stressing people out right now.
Well, you know, I think some radio stations do stress people out, but I'm hoping ours lessens their stress by pointing out that everybody has mental health, so they have some risk of having a mental health problem, but that most of the problems that we encounter have some kind of a very meaningful solution. And often people, after they've been through a stressful time with a mental health problem, they end up in a better place on the other side.
So you just have to remember that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
There is, yeah. It's not always an oncoming freight train.
And when you do see that oncoming traffic, there's no need to get stressed out because you're going to get through it just fine.
Exactly. You know, Brendan, the other thing is the importance of the endocrine system with stress. And I think that's the other night you were asking about the stress of childbirth and how complicated that is.
Well, I was, we were talking about that the other day, because you were pointing out, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were suggesting that there is no such thing as good stress.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think there is good stress. I think there's good and bad stress. I mean, having the stress of having a baby, as an example, it's a very demanding, potentially life-threatening thing. But at the same time, you know, on the other side of it is this really wonderful experience of having a very meaningful connection with someone else, which is such a huge part of being human.
Brings me to my next point, which is I might be having your child.
Well, Brendan, that will be making history.
I don't need to stress you out, but the blood work comes back.
So this would be the second example of immaculate conception, then, I'm assuming, if we're certain about the first one.
Well, let's just say we're unsure.
Okay. Well, I wonder, I think our time is drawing to a close here.
Probably a good thing.
Pardon me?
Probably a good thing.
Hey, I would think it probably is. I'm going to turn it over to Richard. I want to thank you again for participating and sharing your wisdom.
See you in a few minutes.
See you then.
That was psychiatrist Dr. Chris Gorman and Brendan Beiser discussing our condition of the week, stress. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. Coming up, we speak with Nicole Emily Marcia, the founder and director of Fine Balance Yoga. And for our personal story, we'll be speaking with Candace Hendrick about career change. First, a quick announcement about how you can help support this station. The volunteers at Beautiful Minds Radio enjoy bringing you shows that help destigmatize and demystify mental illness. If you enjoy our show and others on Co-op Radio, we ask that you make a donation to Co-op Radio. You can call now to make your donation. Please dial 604-684-8494, extension 230. Again, that's 604-684-8494, extension 230. You can also visit our website, www.beautifulmindsradio.org, and click on our donation page. Please indicate that Beautiful Minds Radio is your favorite program. And we're going to actually go right to our interview with Nicole Emily Garcia, and she's here in the studio today. She's the founder and director of Fine Balance Yoga, and she's been a yoga teacher for 8 years and a practicing yoga therapist for 4 years. Nicole provides yoga therapy to clients with mental health issues, chronic pain, addictions, and other trauma-related problems. Welcome to Beautiful Minds, Nicole.
Thanks, Richard. It's great to be here.
So tell me, what aspects of yoga are helpful regarding one's mental health?
Well, I think a lot of aspects of yoga are helpful in regards to an individual's mental health. Certainly, I think that we see a lot of isolation with folks that are living with mental health conditions, and going to a yoga class and being part of a group can help to break that isolation. Certainly, there are particular kinds of breathing techniques that could be more stimulating, certain breathing techniques that could be more relaxing in the case of somebody who's experiencing a lot of stress, as we've heard spoken about earlier. And again, there are certain asana or poses which can have relaxing or sedating effects. So, yeah, I think there's that sense of community in addition to more specific techniques within the practice of yoga.
And in teaching yoga for mental health, you focus on safety. What do you mean by safety, and why is it specifically important for teaching yoga to those with mental health issues?
Well, I mean safety in a couple of different ways. First of all, I mean safety in the sense of the classroom. So I believe that, you know, as a yoga teacher, my primary job is to create a safe space. And by that I mean a space where everybody feels welcome, so it's inclusive, and also a space where should emotion arise, and it often does on the mat, that it's okay for that to happen, and that the student also knows that it's okay to come back. I also refer to safety in the sense of having a safe experience within one's own body. In particular, for folks who have experienced trauma, this is a very important experience, and one that they may not have ever experienced in their lifetime.
And can certain poses be considered triggers for those with mental health issues or those who have experienced trauma?
Well, I mean, you know, people are going to get triggered, and you can't eliminate triggers, because they can come in all different forms. And there are some poses that are thought to be potentially more triggering than others. So things like prone hip openers, some kinds of back bends. I think that the way one languages certain yoga poses can also be triggering. It's important to be very mindful of language. And really, you know, and I say this to a lot of the other teachers that I teach or that I train, what's most important is not to avoid poses that may be triggering, but to be always giving students choices. Choices around whether or not they stay in the pose or come into it in the first place. Choices around how long they stay. Choices sometimes even around staying in the room. So again, any pose can be presented to a student as long as it's very implicit that they've got choices within that pose.
I see. Now, yoga affects the autonomic nervous system. So before we get into that effect, explain that system.
Okay, I'll keep it real simple because I need it that way too. The autonomic nervous system is essentially divided into two parts. There's the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. And the these systems are essentially there in order to keep us safe. The parasympathetic nervous system is, for instance, what's dominant right now within this space. We're at peace. We're relaxed. We're at rest. So our digestion is activated. Our heart rate is, you know, normal. Our blood pressure is normal. Should we suddenly feel that our safety was threatened, our sympathetic nervous system would come into play. So glucose would be increased into our muscles. Our heart rate would increase. Our pupils would dilate.
I see. Mm-hmm. So then how does yoga affect the autonomic nervous system? How does the breathing specifically during yoga affect the autonomic nervous system?
Well, the breathing and other yogic practices can activate the parasympathetic nervous system or the relaxation response. So again, if somebody's experiencing a high degree of anxiety for instance, in the case of addiction, you know, they're feeling cravings, or again, as was spoken about before, they're experiencing some kind of stress. There are particular breathing techniques that we can use in order to activate that parasympathetic nervous system, to slow everything down, to create an experience of calm.
I see. And so what physiological changes result from a reduced stress response?
Well, when the parasympathetic nervous system is activated, essentially we're seeing someone who is in a relaxed and open state. They can take in intellectual and emotional information more easily. They can express that with more ease. And again, this is one of the reasons why yoga is such a powerful complementary therapy. When used in conjunction with something, for instance, say like cognitive behavioral therapy or something like that, it can be very helpful to help to relax someone and prepare them to go into a talk therapy process or a more traditional therapy process.
And can yoga be helpful in treating post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yoga is a very powerful complementary therapy when working with people with post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, I'm very careful about the language that I use around this. I don't think that yoga is a curative, but I think there's incredibly compelling research out there that points to yoga or other body-based therapies as well being incredibly important with folks who have experience or who are living with post-traumatic stress disorder.
And so any particular examples from personal experience? Do you know any clients? What have you heard from clients? Let's say maybe a client who has had PTSD. Mm-hmm. Can you share a story about someone who's really benefited personally from yoga?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the only kind of teaching that I do is with people. I would probably say about 98% of them have serious trauma histories, and a lot of them are living with post-traumatic stress disorder. So a lot of the feedback that I get is from, you know, folks that are trauma survivors. And yeah, I mean, what I hear on a daily basis is, I have never felt this relaxed before. I've never had an experience of feeling safe in my body. This is the first time that I haven't experienced pain for such an extended period of time. There's so many stories. I hear it after every yoga class from a lot of students.
Excellent. You've been listening to Emily Nicole Marcia. Actually, it was reversed. Anyway.
It's Nicole Emily Marcia.
I know. Yeah. I see it. Yeah, exactly. When I saw that like that, I thought, wait a second, that's not right. Founder of Fine Balance Yoga. We'll be back with the second half of our interview after this short announcement. We're going to actually play Blame It On Me by the Bare Naked Ladies.
Sometimes the thing that allows not enough for you.
can blame it on me.
Nicole, welcome back to Beautiful Minds Radio.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So tell me, how can yoga affect one's pain response?
Well, again, you know, I certainly am careful about ever suggesting that yoga is any kind of curative. I have run classes that were specific for folks who were living with chronic pain. And I think that what yoga can do, and particularly the mindfulness aspect of yoga, is that it can help to change the student's relationship to their pain. So again, through teaching the mindfulness techniques, breathing techniques, staying present, staying in the moment, staying with sensation in the body as it arises, we can often see, there's a lot of research out there that says that, you know, learning mindfulness-based stress reduction techniques, and, you know, again, that can be within the context of yoga, can help to change people's relationship to pain.
And what about one's mood? How can yoga affect one's mood?
Well, generally speaking, I think that yoga, you know, after a yoga class, one walks out feeling pretty good. I mean, you and I were speaking earlier about the yoga class that you went to,
right,
and you said that you just felt really relaxed. There
yes.
was a sense of well-being that came over you, yes?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Just before the show, I was telling Nicole how after speaking to her, after speaking to you last week, right,
mm-hmm.
I just said, boy, I've got to get to my yoga class. I go to the YMCA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get there. And so I went to a hatha yoga class, and I really felt calm and peaceful after the class, and I just thought, boy, I've got to do this more often.
Yeah, and that's it exactly. It's just that sense of peace.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Now, some of our listeners, though, they think of yoga and they think, $15 fee, joining
mm-hmm.
a membership, or a membership to a gym, etc. Tell me a little bit about your organization.
Well, I work for several different organizations. I think that the organization that you're referring to is an organization called Yoga Outreach.
Yes.
And I'm their director of teachers training and mentorship. Now, what Yoga Outreach does is we provide volunteer yoga teachers to organizations that serve populations of people who might not otherwise have access to yoga programming. So those classes are free, and our volunteer yoga teachers go into safe houses for women, recovery centers for people who are in recovery from addictions, mental health organizations, and they offer free yoga classes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So this is really reaching to a lot of people that could really use this but couldn't otherwise afford it, I imagine.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not just that it can be restrictive financially, but again, yoga outreach teachers go into organizations that folks are already accessing. So it happens someplace that's familiar to them. You know, they don't have to go through any kind of process or expense in terms of getting props or mats. And there are always resources for them within those organizations. Again, should anything arise for them, then they need to talk about it.
Okay. And earlier you mentioned isolation. So can this communal nature of yoga, is that a really important part for helping people who might feel isolated?
I think that the communal aspect of yoga is one of the most important aspects of why yoga is effective for people who are living with a mental illness that keeps them isolated. It really is an opportunity to be around other people, to engage or not engage, you know, but to still have that sense of being with others. And, you know, again, it's a pretty healthy place to meet, you know, as opposed to over a shared substance or something like that.
Right. Now, you've been working for years with people who have concurrent disorders, mental health disorders, and substance use. What have people, can you give me an example of someone with a concurrent disorder, maybe, and how yoga has helped someone?
Well, I work as the yoga therapist at the Burnaby Center for Mental Health and Addictions, and I've been there for about 4 years, ever since they opened. And the folks who are living there are, you know, all have pretty complex mental health and addiction histories. For many of them, again, it's the first time in their lives where they have not only an opportunity to have a safe experience in their bodies, but to experience their bodies as powerful, as what I see for a lot of them is that there's a confidence that comes. There's a sense of athleticism, even when the practice is pretty relaxed, you know, it's pretty chilled. There's a sense of accomplishment, of having gotten up and taken initiative and taken effective action and done something good for themselves in their day. You know, it's great for self-esteem. Yeah.
Great. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for speaking to Beautiful Minds Radio.
Thank you for having me.
That was Nicole Emily Garcia talking about yoga and mental health. If you'd like to volunteer with the Beautiful Minds Radio team or want to recommend a guest or expert, please send a message to info@beautifulmindsradio.org. And we just want to remind you again that twice a month, every month, Beautiful Minds volunteer programmers bring you stories to demystify and destigmatize mental illness. We ask that you support such program by making a donation to Co-op Radio. Visit www.beautifulmindsradio.org and click the Donate Now button. With the support of listeners like you, without the support of listeners like you, this is what you would hear. That's right, silence. Please visit www.beautifulmindsradio.org or call 604-684-8494, extension 230. Please indicate that Beautiful Minds Radio is your favorite program. Your donations are tax deductible.
My life is brilliant. My life is brilliant. You're beautiful, you're beautiful, you're beautiful, it's true. My life is brilliant, my life is brilliant, my life is brilliant.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. This is Beautiful Minds. How do you deal with mental health issues during a life transition? Our next guest, Candace Kendrick, will share her personal story. She'll be interviewed by Blue Hardman, who is new to our program, a new volunteer, and he has interviewed Candace Kendrick about her personal story. And so you'll hear all about her personal story about mental health during a career change.
Thanks for joining us here on Beautiful Minds Radio. Thank you for taking your time to share your story with us. Right now we're talking to Candace Kendrick, who has a story to share with us about her personal experience. All right, Candace, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Great. What happened in your experience, and how did you overcome the obstacles that you had to deal with in your life?
Well, essentially, I was going about living my life, plugging along, just doing day-to-day stuff. And I had a wonderful home, a wonderful daughter, a man I loved, a bunch of hobbies I enjoyed, and a successful job. that I really felt like something was missing, or that there was something wrong in my life. And I felt confused and ashamed and didn't feel like I could share that with anyone else. I would essentially tell myself that I was lucky to have all of these things and I should be grateful for these things, but I still felt like I wanted something more and I couldn't shake that sense. I was really unhappy, and in fact, I was more than unhappy. I was extremely angry, so angry that the smallest little thing would send me into a rage at home. In the workforce and to the outside world, I presented a very polished, confident, successful persona because I was a leader. When in fact, I was actually immersed in a lot of fear, and I was expert at hiding those fears. My rage actually got the better of me, and it really frightened me. I realized that with my partner, when we'd have a disagreement, my anger was so disproportionate to whatever the situation was, and that it was slowly but surely getting worse.
And when you felt that why, that getting worse with your partner and the other people in your family around you, did that affect you? And did you feel, you know, afraid of them losing their image of you as you felt they viewed you?
I did. I was concerned about how they were perceiving me, but I really had felt like I had no control over it. And because I felt like I had no control over it, it actually got worse.
Right.
It was like I was feeding the anger or the rage monster. And if they said anything that, you know, might say, you know, what you are doing, Candace, is, you know, making me upset, I would just go off.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to take any responsibility. I wanted to project my fears and my blame onto anyone who had the gall to say that maybe I was responsible for it. It was very painful.
Right. So when you started being bombarded, getting bombarded with that from other people, then you know, at what point did you sort of realize and stop yourself and say, no, maybe it is me, and maybe I do have to make a change and do something about this?
Well, the interesting thing is the only people that saw me in this light were my immediate family. And so it didn't actually spread out to other circles until my grandmother passed away very suddenly. And so then I had not only the rage, but then I had the tremendous grief coupled with the rage and anger towards her dying, leaving me alone, because I saw her as my support system. And then that's when things spiraled out of complete control. And for me, recognizing that I was about to lose the one person I really valued is my daughter, because she just couldn't handle the crazy anymore. She couldn't handle the drama. She couldn't handle, you know, walking on eggshells. And, you know, she was in her teenage phase of rebellion, but I was 10 times worse than she was. And she was like, this is unacceptable.
Yeah, it was her
and
turn to be in her angst.
That's right. I was the mom, and yet more angst than she was by a long shot.
Right. So would you say that, you know, you're most grateful then for having her there to, you know, really be the catalyst to bring you out and say, you know, yes, I have to make a change and I have to do something different, you know, for the sake of my friends and family?
Absolutely. If I had not had that relationship with her and valued our relationship, I have no idea what would have happened, but I am clear today that that was literally what was placed on our relationship.
Yeah, so would you say then that, you know, had you maybe not had that you might not have actually sought help or tried to fix the underlying problems?
Correct. I recognized that I needed an anchor of some kind to help me stay the course of facing the fear and walking through my own personal fire, because that's what helped me get out of bed every morning. Knowing that, you know, I needed to provide shelter. I needed to step up in some fashion or form, and I didn't know how that was going to be. But because I could see that I wanted to have my relationship with her and have it get better rather than progressively worse, which is where it was headed, I needed to do something. So that's when I reached out.
Right. And when you reached out, so what did you do at that point to seek help, let's say?
Unfortunately for me, I'd had an opportunity to get to know a social worker a few years before, and I trusted her, so I picked up the phone and I called her, gave her a quick synopsis of what was happening in my life, asked, you know, can I get in and see you as soon as possible? And she created an opening, and I would be able to see her within 1 or 2 days. And that was the start of moving forward and getting out of that hole.
Right.
Despair and hopelessness.
And she suggested, you know, counseling and, you know, different tactics to, you know, help calm yourself and so on and so forth.
Yes, exactly. And she helped me, you know, stay on a course of, you know, having weekly sessions and, you know, pursuing other resources like reading books or, you know, taking a look personally, like taking time for self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Gotten there, and that was fantastic. That was really wonderful. She didn't want me to stay in that victim mode. She wanted me, at some point when I was ready, to shift from being a victim to feeling
empowered again in your own life. Yeah,
that's right. And that was critical for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, she had a philosophy. She would rather have, you know, worked so successfully with her clients that she helped them all get better, that there was no business left. For her, that was how she operated her own business, and I'm very grateful that she had that mindset.
Right. So, and if you had any advice to give anybody going through similar issues, what would it be that you would like to say to them?
I would like to tell them not to isolate themselves. Creating an isolation is just making the problem much worse. That they really need to find their own anchor and ask for the support. So, you know, if that anchor is someone in your family or a colleague or a minister or neighbor or friend, reach out, ask them for help.
Okay.
When you get into this place where you feel so overwhelmed, that was the thing, is I was so used to fixing my own problems for the first time in my life, I couldn't fix it. And I was forced to ask for help.
And so today, how do you feel about your life now, and how do you feel about how things have changed for you now that you've gotten help and you've sought counseling and you know, have worked these problems out?
My life is fantastic. I've done a complete 180. I feel that I'm truly plugged in to my authentic self and that I can create anything I want. I'm living a life of my dreams. And all of my friends and my family and wow, how did you go from there of being in such a dark, dark place to where you are now? I want some of what you've got. Tell me how. It's wonderful. I just feel so blessed.
Wow, that's great. Well, I want to thank you very much for sharing your story with us, and good luck on all your future endeavors. I'm really glad you took the time, and I'm really glad that things, you know, worked out for you and that you found the help you needed and you found a way to get your life back, basically, and really salvage the things that, you know, meant the most to you. So I just want to thank you for sharing that with us.
It's my pleasure.
All right, great.
That was Candace Kendrick talking about mental health during a career change. Now, stick around for color commentary with Dr. Chris Gorman and the Honorable Brendan Beiser.
Hello there, Brendan, and thank you, Richard. This is another amazing show. We had the somebody who knows a lot about yoga, somebody who knows a lot about pain. We talked about stress. We talked about Brendan and his difficulties, which continue to elude us. Brendan, do you want to say anything more about where you're at today?
Well, like I said, I might be carrying your job.
Again, as long as you believe that, buddy, you make sure you don't miss your next psychiatrist appointment.
You know, I'm constantly listening to Candace's story. In all seriousness, I find the personal stories to be they're inspiring, and they are inspired, and you can just hear the energy in her voice, which is probably something that she wouldn't have recognized herself to be able to have when she was back in her quote-unquote, you know, dark period in her life. And here she is. She just sounds completely transformed. Amazing.
Well, again, it's that thing with stress. I mean, it even though it's a very awful thing and you would never wish it on your worst enemy, it can actually bring out the best in people. It's this new concept we spend a lot of time talking about in mental health called resilience. And resilience is all the factors outside of the person and all the strengths within the person that help them recover from a very difficult time. That's partly why I like this radio show, is because we promote the idea that you shouldn't hate yourself for having a problem with your mental health.
This radio show is like your personal yoga, isn't it?
This is my personal yoga. You should see the position that I get into sometimes when I'm thinking about the show.
I believe you're currently holding the downward dog.
I'm not. I'm the upward pretzel. It's unbelievable.
Now, Richard, not to bring up the child's pose, because I know you're a master of that. But I thought that Nicole Emily, as opposed to Emily Nicole, had to say what she's up to. I don't know if you practice yoga or not, doctor. I would imagine you do. I mean, just looking at you look like a man who does. You don't get looking like that overnight, I'm sure.
They call me the human slinky.
Well, Slinky, for those of the, I actually did try yoga this week at the Y too. So Richard and I are both members of the Y. I found that out tonight.
Wow.
And he's right. I found going into it.
So you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. And I know that Brendan got so excited about talking about yoga at the Y that he just actually hung up his phone, hence the busy signal. But that's right, both of us, I learned that now about Brendan. He goes to the Y as well. And it's, I tell you, a great place, all the yoga classes that are included with membership. And I really feel that yoga class had really helped center me. And so I love it. Do you do yoga?
I do yoga as much as I can. It's just such an amazing, amazing combination of exercise and mindful meditation, and that's the antidote to stress, I would think.
Right, exactly. It really is. This friend of mine teaches aerial yoga in New York, and she was saying she thinks she gets frustrated because people come to the class and they think yoga's about weight loss or toning your muscles. And she said it's about the mind.
Absolutely.
Right. It's all about centering. And so, you know, I really found that. And when she said that to me, it stuck with me. And I said, boy, I've got to get to yoga, right? And
well, we're moving into the 21st century. We now have yoga at St. Paul's Hospital on our units. And it's a giant leap forward for, you know, getting people engaged and trying to provide them with some peace when it seems elusive.
That's right, yeah. And, well, I hope it can bring some peace to Brendan, given that he's going to be bearing your child. That's,
yes.
We know the first,
wow.
This is his first or his second?
I think it's the second in his mind, and he had a beautiful delivery of a beautiful, mindful baby, again, all in his mind. I don't know what to say. I'm happy for him, and at the same time, tears are coming out of my eyes.
Great. Well, that was Dr. Chris Gorman and his sidekick, the Honorable Brendan Beiser. Because now Brendan, you know, he wanted a name. You're Dr. Gorman, so he's now the Honorable Brendan Beiser. And you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. This is Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness on the second and third Mondays of the month at 7 p.m. I just want to mention who has helped out with the show. Our website, by the way, is beautifulmindsradio.org. Our team includes Brendan Beiser, Stephen Elliott, Dana Gillis, Dr. Chris Gorman, Dr. Patty Gorman, Will Martin, Joelle Holdrenay, Sarah Casamong, Blue Hardman, and myself, Richard J. Dalton, Jr. We'd like to thank Nicole, Emily, Marcia, and Candace Kendrick for their contributions to destigmatizing mental illness.